If you're anything like me, you spent your childhood assuming that one day you'd meet your Prince Charming. You'd get married, you'd have a nice house in the suburbs, a dog, a career, and a couple of kids. It never crossed your mind that Prince Charming wouldn't come along, or that tragically you'd lose him before his time, or that your marriage wouldn't work out, or even that your biological clock would have other ideas. Or maybe you never really wanted that sort of happily ever after. Maybe you never wanted a man, but you did know you always wanted children. We're living in an age where, for the first time, women can embrace motherhood on their own terms. They no longer have to put their lives on hold waiting for the right man, or settling for someone who they know isn't right for them, just so they can become a mother. More women than ever before are embarking on the journey to become what's known as a solo mother by choice. And while for a lot of us it doesn't feel like a choice, but more a necessity, the bottom line is there are now options for you to be able to fulfill your dreams of motherhood if the traditional route isn't playing out as expected. The No Need for Prince Charming podcast will share stories of Australian women who have successfully become solo mothers by choice. They each have a unique story as to why they decided to pursue motherhood in this way and the journey they had to go through to make this dream a reality. The hope is that by sharing these stories, you'll have the knowledge and the confidence to embark on this amazing journey yourself if you determine it's the right one for you. In the words of Walt Disney, all of our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. All you need is faith, trust, and a little bit of pixie dust. So welcome to the podcast today, Catherine. I would love to start by understanding a little bit about who you were before you decided to become a solo mum by choice.
Okay. Well, I was 35. I was working. I had a really good job as an IT manager. Mm-hmm. I was in charge of an IT team, doing really well for myself. And I think about a year before my father had passed away, and I'd split up with my partner at the time, and he didn't want children, and I did want children, and we just had this amicable, you know, let's not be silly, because we had a bit of a pregnancy scare, and, you know, he was like, yeah, no, and I'm like, oh, yeah, actually, I'm ready for this. And anyway, I wasn't pregnant, which is fine, and we just said, you know, we both want different things. And, you know, a year later I was, you know, 35, and I'm going, all right, I need to make a decision. I know that's that, you know, that age where you have to kind of it's a bit of a do or die. Mm-hmm. And so I just decided I wanted to do it. And I was talking to my friend who I used to work with at another company, and she told me, yeah, that all of her gay friends used to go to a clinic in Albury. Mm-hmm. And so I just went, oh, no. And I'd heard that Victoria was hard. And so I didn't know that it was illegal. I just knew Victoria was difficult. So I was quite naive. And so, but I just went up to, I made the appointment and went up to Albury. Mm-hmm. And I took my mother along, and I had the required, you know, psychological consultation, and I think they're probably happier too that I had somebody there supporting me. And it was all really straightforward, went home and just did my different tests I had to do. I can hardly remember actually what I did, but there were some tests I had to do with hormones or what have you, and then whipped up to back up to Albury. When it was time, and had an IUI, and I fell pregnant straight away.
First time. Wow. First time. Did you know anybody that was a solo mum by choice at that stage?
Nope.
No.
Not a soul. No. It was just something I had a really strong maternal instinct. And I think having a father out of the scene who I thought might judge me and be difficult, I think also made it easier to navigate. So he passed away from cancer. And so it was just, you know, my mum, she had a new partner. And, yeah, it was just, there's no kind of real, well, at that stage, no opposition. Yeah.
Yeah. So she
was just easy.
Supportive.
Yeah, I owned my own house. I was kind of, you know, independent, well, I had a mortgage, didn't own it outright, you know, and I was just very settled in everything. So, Yeah, it was easy.
And one of the most exciting things for people who are listening that they might not have caught on to yet is you said that it was illegal in Victoria at the time. So how old is your first child that you conceived with your first IUI?
My first child is 21
Wow.
and my other child is 14. So I didn't go out, didn't know I really wanted to have more than one until my daughter, oh, she was kind of showing some kind of single child braggedness a little bit. And I went, oh. And I also thought that it would be nice for her, if something happened to me, it'd be nice for her to have a sibling, I guess. That was the other thing, because it was a single mum thing. And so I tried, and I went to try again. And that was not so easy. Because at that stage, I was in my 40s. And they would say to me, oh, you might just, have to give up. Well, because I was trying, I had a couple of miscarriages. At one time they tried the, what is it, the, where they do your eggs, the in vitro,
IVF,
IVF. And my body just shut down and hardly produced any eggs. And they went, oh, I think it's all over, Red Rover. And I went, nah, I said, I'm ovulating, I know my body. And I'd already had one miscarriage, I think, at that stage. And then I ended up having another miscarriage and just kept trying and fell pregnant. So, I was right.
You're right. So you've got a
I knew my
21-year-old
body.
and a 14-year-old, which is, yeah, for anyone listening, really exciting because most of us have got younger children. So everyone's going to be very fascinated about what life is like for the future, I guess. How easy was it for you to access donor sperm at that time? Clearly it was illegal in Victoria, but was there much supply in Albury, or what did you have to go through to
I
get?
think I probably had about eight to choose from memory. For this donor, it was, he had, I went for somebody who had some similar characteristics, I guess, to some of the men that I dated. And I tend to date tall men, I tend to date fairly well-built men. I was a bit of a sucker for blue eyes. And he had light brown hair, but that really didn't matter. And like I didn't, it wasn't a huge thing, but he was a student. I vaguely remember being told he was a student, and had all these different occupations to choose from. And went, yeah, no, I'm definitely not going to, I would never date one of those. So there were just some things that some people I went, yeah, no, 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 no. And he just seemed the most likely compatible in that respect.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was
So
it. There was a very kind of simple, and there wasn't a lot of information really. It was just physical characteristics. Yeah.
and back then, could you get access to information about the donor when the children turned 18, or was it purely anonymous?
Purely anonymous. And to complicate things, the sperm came from a clinic in Perth.
Oh dear. Okay.
So, I don't know, if my kids would ever going to be able to find out. I think Amy, she did start pursuing it, but they knocked it back for some reason, and then she got busy and she never got back to them. They did pursue her quite a bit, and she hasn't got back to them, but she will. She'll do it when she's ready.
Okay.
Just not a priority for her right now.
So no access to information on the donor. What about any donor siblings that were born from the same one?
Yeah, I had put my name on a register in America called donorsiblings.com, where you can put in the clinic name and the donor ID. And I'd left it there. And a year later, I got an email from a lady who said, hey, pretty sure I've got donor siblings. And interestingly enough, she was from Victoria as well. She lives 10 minutes up the road, and the two eldest children are 6 months apart. So that kind of brings into that issue of had our children met, because they cross paths at interschool sports, and it was on the cards for them to socially, cross paths as well, because they live in the same area. And luckily, there's no interest there.
Yeah.
like, no way. So yeah, we met them, and you know, the kids all know each other, and are friends and so forth.
Are you aware of how many other donor siblings there are out there, or you just know the ones that have made contact?
Oh, well, she has three children with the same donor, and I at the time there was one other family with one child,
Yeah.
a male. However, if that clinic had sent the sperm to more than one clinic, I don't know whether that happened in Australia, there could be lots of siblings.
Yeah, slightly different
So
times,
then,
isn't it?
yeah. So I don't know what the rules were back then, and I guess that's always, you know, a potential.
So growing up, you wouldn't have known many other solo mums by choice, back then.
No,
Did you get
no.
any interesting responses from people when they learned that that's how you had your children?
So I went traveling when I was pregnant, and on the way back, I think I went up to Noosa. I came back down and stopped in Sydney to see my auntie, because it was after my father had died. I thought I'll go as his sister. I thought I'll go see her, because he didn't want to see her when he was dying. He didn't want anyone to see him in the state he was in, and she was very, very angry and upset about it. And so I went to visit her, stay for a night, but I did only stay one night, because at the dinner table, you know, I said, oh, I don't think I'll eat that type of thing because I'm pregnant. And she just looked at me, she said, oh, I didn't think we were meant to speak about that. And I went, okay,
Oh.
loud and clear. So I just left, and I've never spoken to her since.
Oh, well.
I just did. No, I've got no time for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just don't need people like that in my life. Yeah.
What about as the girls were growing up and going to school and things like that, when other parents learned, were they accepting? Or I think it's getting more common now, but it's still not something that many people are that aware of.
Yeah, look, I never hid it from my girls. I never made a fuss about it. To them, it was normal. It was as normal as, you know, what do you mean? You know, you don't have an uncle who's married to a boy. You know, it's like, because I've, you know, my brother's gay. And so for them, going to school was their first, I guess, eye-opening experience with regard to people's, I guess, biases and so forth, where, you know, they didn't know that. Some people didn't like gay people. They didn't know that there was issues there. They didn't know that being a donor kid was not, you know, the average
Yeah.
type of thing. They learned that, what, you have, you know, two sets of grandparents, and you know, they kind of, so they did learn about different things. And but I just never made a fuss about it. I never really, I just was very factual, and that was it. You know, I didn't make a fuss.
They just always knew from the beginning, I don't have a dad, I have a
Yeah.
donor.
Correct. Yeah. No fuss. It is who they are, and they're loved and wanted, and yeah. You know.
Did you have a lot of family support for, especially those early days when they're little babies
Heaps
and
of support. Yeah, heaps of support. In fact, they're the only grandchildren. Because my sister hasn't had children, and my brother hasn't had children with his partner. So, and neither, I think my sister might have wanted some, but just didn't turn out for her. And my brother doesn't want children. So, yeah, it's, I mean, so mum had a lot, has had a lot of joy through my kids. And yeah, they've been a really big part of her life, and so forth. So, yeah, which has been nice. She's passed away last year. But yeah, while she was here, she really was an active participant in their lives, and she even moved in for a while. So as she got older,
Oh, that would have been nice for the girls to have that close relationship with her.
well, she was living next door, but then even that became too much for her. So she went, yeah, no, I don't even want to deal with that. She'd had cancer, and she'd been fighting that for, you know, 14 odd years. So I think she must have known she was on that downhill slide, and when she's just started to wind up her life, I think, yeah, wanted things to be easier, didn't want responsibilities. But she still wanted to be a part. She just wanted to be a part of, the family, it was her, that's what made her happy, contributing, cooking, doing things. Yeah.
And obviously,
So,
she was
yeah.
very supportive because she came with you for your treatment and for your first appointment. So, must have been
Yeah, she just came for the
lots of
first one,
support.
the rest I did on my own. Yeah, that was it. So, yeah, very supportive. Yeah, she was, around for my firstborn, and I think my sister was in for the second. She came in with me, ended up having caesars for both of them. I had emergency caesar for the first, and the second, I actually had to schedule it because I had to schedule someone to look after my eldest.
Does make it a little bit more challenging, doesn't it, if you've got another one at
It
home or
does.
someone
So my
else to
brother
look
had to come
after?
down from, yeah, my brother came down from Sydney. Stayed in my house and looked after my youngest, and my sister came to hospital with me, and mum was still in hospital, recovering at that stage from surgery. So yeah, that was kind of, yeah, had to be planned. I didn't want it, but it had to be planned, and I just had to go off, suck it up, and do whatever you have to do to get your child out safely and get everybody cared for. And yeah,
What would you
so that
say
was
has been your
that.
biggest challenges being a solo mum over the years?
Oh, mothers groups with, all married couples, and you're the only single one, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit hard to navigate sometimes. Sometimes you're pushed to, I was pushed to the outer a little bit with that. But I've also got some long-term friends from that as well. So, there's a bit of both. The other thing was I had problems with the maternal child health nurse who was quite judgmental, and she had decided that I wasn't looking after my baby adequately, that she wasn't gaining enough weight and all these things. And
We were
I went
just
into
having
hospital.
conversations in a Facebook group about that yesterday. I feel like all of them say that to everybody. It's just awful, isn't it? So stressful.
Yeah, so I went into a sleep clinic and they watched me breastfeed. And she was a difficult feeder. She was always a difficult feeder. And they said she's fine. She's feeding fine, she's doing fine, she's doing everything fine. We don't see any problems. And I just went, okay, there is no problem. And I changed to a different maternal child health nurse. It
Yeah.
was fabulous. So, and didn't look back. Yeah.
Yeah, reoccurring theme with them, unfortunately, which is not
It's
ideal when you're in your
interesting.
most kind of vulnerable state with this brand new baby and you just want to do the right thing. And yeah, lots of
Yeah,
people
she
end
was.
up in tears,
Yeah,
it
my first
seems.
one was a screamer, and I think maybe she had some reflux issues. I don't know. She didn't really latch on very well. But yeah, I was a first time mum, and maybe I was just, uptight. I don't know. The second one latched on like a leech, so there was no problems there. It was
And how did
it.
you find that
Just,
age gap with 5 years? Was that a good age gap? Would it make
ah,
it
it's
slightly
difficult.
easier?
Yeah, very difficult. The youngest one has always wanted to do what the oldest one's doing. It wants to grow up too quickly, or has wanted to grow up too quickly. And she's always been quite fixated on, father figures and men and, all of that. So Amy's not. She's always been really accepting and said, I know I'm wanted, I know I'm loved, I'm curious about my identity, but I don't feel I need a father. So she's very kind of quite, well, that's my take on it. She'll probably have to give you her own perspective. But whereas my other child, just always wanting that and craving that kind of male affection. And I'm trying to explain to her that, hey, I had a father. He never gave me a cuddle. He never, he wasn't there. He had quite a, an unusual, unacceptable moral compass, I would call it. And there are lots of things that weren't perfect about him, and there's lots of people with fathers that are not perfect, that are alcoholics, that are violent, or they've died, or, you know, lots. Everyone's got different circumstances. And I have, although, you know, I've always tried to explain that to her, she just hasn't, you know, kind of, she's just always wanted.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's always, she's had felt that gap for whatever reason. Yeah. Hmm. And she strongly likes to identify with her DNA type background in terms of the father. Interestingly, I vaguely remember them saying his parents were from England, but as it turns out, you know, the closest relative we've found, we think, was a half-sister of the father who was in Poland.
Okay.
So, but that brought out skeletons in her closet when she tried to work out who this person was that she didn't know, that was a very close relative to her. Her mother got very angry, and the family kind of, it caused a lot of issues in her family. That was just using, you know, the online DNA connection. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a risk that everyone that's donor conceived could use that in the future as well, isn't there? So if the donor hasn't told his family that he's donated, might not yes. be met with the best response. Yeah, interesting.
Well, it might, yeah, it may not be, but it is what it is, you know.
And there's nothing on you or your girls. It's more on them that they should be a bit more open and transparent with what they're doing.
Yeah, I think they're the ones that miss out anyway, you know. We don't need or want anything from the mother than identity, really. So,
yeah, it was such different times back then that they were anonymous. I've been in contact with a few donors now and hearing their perspective that they do hope that they will meet any children that result from their donations, and they do think about them. So I wonder what those donors that will have no way to make contact actually think about it, or if they do at all. I don't know.
Yeah.
Different times.
I mean, I'm interested, but yes, yeah. Eastern European, I guess, is where he's genetically aligned to.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing I don't have in my DNA, and that's their half. Yeah. Yeah.
And did you end up doing any dating or have any relationships after you had the girls? How was that?
I did. I had a few. No dickheads. and then I also went, do I want to bring strangers into the house with the girls?
Yeah.
It wasn't a priority for me. It still isn't a priority for me, actually. I'm not even looking. I quite like my freedom. I'm not, absolutely not in the market. Sounds terrible, doesn't it?
No, I completely understand. Mine's been like 5 years and I'm already thinking that I'm like, will there ever be anyone? Maybe not. Pretty happy. So.
Yeah, I didn't feel that drive actually to have a partner once I had my first child.
Yeah.
Interesting. I kind of lost that drive and felt really satisfied and complete and all of that. I haven't closed the door to somebody in my life. If I met somebody and we kicked it off and, you know, things slowly, you know, sure, I'm quite open to it, but it's just not that important to me. I don't know. I've got lots of interests. I'm always busy. So it'd be nice for companionship. It'd be nice to have somebody, you know, but, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's not something I think about on a daily basis, you know.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Did you think about it a lot before you decided to become a solo mum?
About did I want a partner? I think it might have just been my biological clock ticking over. I don't know. Maybe that was the driver. I don't know. Yeah. I guess I'd have to sit down and have to unpack that with a psychologist, wouldn't I?
For me, I was like obsessed with finding, like after my marriage ended, obsessed with finding my next husband. And then since having my daughter, I'm like, Don't care.
Yeah,
I'm
no.
Not interested in the slightest. I'm so happy and fulfilled. I don't feel like anything's missing. Whereas previous to her, there was always this massive hole, and I didn't realize that it was just
That would be a
a
similar thing to me. Yeah, except I wasn't married. I was just kind of, had boyfriends, and that was really it. Yeah.
So what do you think you've loved the most about being a solo mum?
Having them all to myself. Not having to contend with conflict,
Yep.
I guess. That external conflict that I've seen, friends and mothers group, partners screwing around, leaving, that type of stuff. That kind of, I guess, that not having to deal with that, I think, is great. Being able to focus my attention on the girls.
Yep.
And just, this it was, I don't know, easy for me.
Is there anything you found hard?
There are aspects that are hard in that you I was I had to juggle a lot. Working, building houses, one in school, one in the tummy. I had a lot on at one stage. So juggling was quite difficult, and that juggling act, getting home from work, having to drive in at one stage to work so I'd get home on time because the trains were unreliable back then. And
I don't think that's changed, has it?
they're not too bad, but back then they just seemed to be more unreliable. I don't know, or maybe that was my perception, but I'd always wanted to make sure I was trying to pick them up on time. And there was always that kind of juggling act. So that was probably the hardest thing, is that, just kind of keeping all the balls in the air. And if you get sick, or and all your kids get sick and so forth, just it impacts you. It's a lot to juggle. It's if there's two of you can split it, but for me, that would be kind of the hardest thing, is the juggling.
And how do you think it changed you as a woman becoming a mum?
It changed me as a woman. Well, it changed me that it made me not want to chase men. At least, I just was. I just There was no any kind of. I kind of look back and think, oh, maybe I was a bit desperate. I don't know. But now I just, since I had kids, I just don't care. So it's changed that aspect of me. I've had, I certainly had lots of friendships with guys. And they usually become interested and I don't, or they take my actions the wrong way, So I'm just friendly and they're just like, oh, she's interested. I'm like, no, not just leave it at the door. So that would probably be, that's probably my hardest thing to navigate, is sometimes keeping somebody at bay in terms of, I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy to be friends.
People find it hard to believe that we could be happy without a man, though, don't they?
Yeah, some people do. Most of the people I hang around with don't. It's usually the men that find it difficult to understand, actually. So I don't think so much other women, it's more men, I find.
Maybe they can see the benefit.
Maybe. I had a friend that chased a guy and married him and tried to have kids with him and it didn't work out and ended up divorcing him, and she lost her house through it and her independence and so forth. So I guess I looked at it and went, oh well, that could have been me too. But in terms of, my friends are, most of my friends have got kids of their own and partners, or they've met partners later and they had a kid on their own, and one had a child on her own and he left. And I think he took the baby at one stage, tried to take it. And then it was complex. And she ended up meeting somebody else later on when the child was, you know, quite a bit older. And happy as Larry now.
Still married. No one else that you've met kind of around your age that has used donor conception?
No. Just other than the other woman, no.
Yeah, it would have been quite revolutionary at the time, really, considering, well, it was legal.
Yeah. But also,
yeah, just not common.
I'm coming across it now at work. There are other colleagues that I think have used donors, or at least that, of some sort of shape, I'm assuming. So that's kind of the only, just my circles that I kind of am in, nobody's done it. It's just the way it is. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess in my generation it was just a little bit different.
Yeah. It's real trailblazing what you did, really.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. I just thought I thought there was probably heaps of people doing what I was doing. And I never considered myself a trailblazer. I just was doing what I wanted to do in my own space and my own time. And I wasn't beholden to anybody. And I was free, you know, to do what I wanted. Yeah. So, yeah, I just did what I wanted.
Love it. Well, that's what we're all doing now. So
without even thinking of consequences or anything, you know, I didn't think about anything. I just went like a bull and just went ahead and did it.
Well, it sounds like you haven't really experienced too much negativity or anything as a result of doing it. So that's fantastic, because I think nowadays it's a lot easier and a lot more accepted. But back then it would have been quite different for
people. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I probably think the older generation, there's probably a lot of, you know, a bit of resistance there. But no, I found it easy to navigate, really. Yeah. But maybe I don't know. I don't overthink it either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think about it a lot. I don't overcomplicate it, if that makes sense.
I think probably a lot of us that have the younger kids are like obsessed with that. But as time goes on, I interviewed another woman who had 13-year-old triplets. And she's like, yeah, at the beginning, really obsessed with talking about the fact they were donor conceived. As they got older, they didn't care. And it's like, okay, this is what we have to look forward to.
Yeah, I didn't really talk about it much, but it was just a fact that was mentioned. And that was it. It was just like, that was life.
If you could go back now, is there anything that you think you'd do differently?
For the sake of my children, I guess using a donor that I knew, I think, would be my preferred approach. So I do remember contemplating a friend, and we did have a discussion about it, a male friend. Met in my Queensland holiday. And we'd stay friends, and he'd come down to Melbourne, and you know, it was a lovely friendship, but nothing serious. And I did have a discussion with him about it, and didn't pursue it. And I think that if I was going to do it again, that would be my preferred way of doing it, purely because there's that other person in their life that if you pass, they've got somebody that you like their character, you know, that they're kind, they're nice, you know, they've got some good nice qualities about them that you like, that you would like in your children perhaps, and yeah, just to have somebody that they could go to as well, and just maybe to have that other role model, maybe. I think it would be nicer for them, maybe. I don't know. For their identity, it's more about identity for them, I think, really, than anything. And it's always nice, I think, to have a backstop for your children, I guess an emotional backstop if something happens to you.
That's something I'm definitely battling with, of what happens if something happens to me, what happens to my daughter. It's a big one.
Yeah, you make sure you've got a will in place. You need a really good lawyer, and you need things in place to protect your kids, to protect your assets for them. And who you would want them to be with if something happened to you. Yeah, really, really important stuff.
The hard conversations, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a really hard conversation, but you've got to do it. It's something you do need to think through.
And if anyone was contemplating going down this path now, is there any advice that you'd give them?
Do it. don't over, look, I would just say don't overthink it. For me, you know, I was in the position that I was able to take a year off financially without struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So I had, you know, everything had kind of lined up for me. With my second, I couldn't afford the 4 year, which I could have. So it was, I went back after 6 months. And that was really also to line up with the, to get her into our childcare, you know, with the new year type of thing as well. You have to take the place or you miss out. My advice would be with everybody is, you know, book your child, you know, do your childcare before you even start getting pregnant, really.
It's so hard to
work
get
out where you want
to,
well, where you want them to go and, you know, which place you like and why. And if you can put your name down, put your name down. And because that can, I think, be the biggest struggle. Yeah. I was lucky. I got into a council one at the at that stage. Both my children went through council childcare. My first child had to go to a bit of a dodgy one to start with, really, which broke my heart. But she survived it. And it was just until it clicked over into the new calendar year and I could go into the council one because I organised that really, really early. And they were great. So really, really good. But, you know, and I was really involved and I was on the committee there, the parents committee, and ran that and did things. And then the council decided to sell it. So it was my last child was in there in the last year that the council one was actually open. So they both got to go through council childcare, which was had a really good standard and really good consistent staff.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got lucky. But yeah, it was expensive. Yeah, that was it. It was like it would have worked out cheaper if they had extended hours to send your child to a private school type facility. Yeah. An early learning facility at a private school a bit cheaper actually than some of the childcare centres. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a benefit of having the 5 year age gap. You didn't have two in childcare at once.
Yeah, that was lucky actually. Yeah, that was quite a gift.
And did you work full time with both of them?
Yes.
That whole time. Yeah. How did you find that juggle?
And, that was the juggle was hard and my oldest eventually said to me, I do not want to ever go back to aftercare, Mum. I'm done.
Ow.
She was eight. She said, I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. I just don't want to do it. She said, I want to catch the bus to school and I want to catch the bus home and I want to let myself into the house and I think that I can do that. And I just went, oh, I don't feel comfortable with that. But I gave some thought and I said, hey, I'll take some time off work. I'll hop on a bus with you for a couple of days and see how you navigate the bus system.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a straight, the bus stop was outside my house. It was in a straight line, about 2 kilometres or 1.5 kilometres down the road. It really wasn't far. And it gave her a great sense of, I think, you know, independence, big girl catching the bus to and from school. And the bus stop was right next to the crossing where the crossing guy was as well. So, you know, she got off the bus and walked to school with other kids who were walking. And then when she got on the bus, she was sitting at a bus stop next to the guy at the school crossing. So there was always somebody there. It was more the other end where my house was that I was concerned about, which was opposite a supermarket. So she had to kind of walk backwards, go across the road and come back, like to use the lights. And I was concerned she might run across the road. That was my biggest concern. But I did set some clear boundaries with that. And she ended up catching the bus to school. We only had one hiccup once when my mother dropped her at a different bus stop because my mother was in the next suburb across at that stage, and put her on a bus. The bus either went to, you know, Southland or it went to St Kilda, but it was the same bus number. And without looking, she hopped on the bus, or my mother put her on the bus, and she went to St Kilda.
Oh, no.
And she couldn't get a hold of me. She couldn't get a hold of my sister. She couldn't get a hold of me. She couldn't get a hold of anybody. She was in tears. And the bus driver, you know, she went to the bus driver and told him what had happened. And I think there weren't many people on the bus. And he was terminating the bus at St Kilda and said, I've got to drive the bus back to close to where your school is. He said, I'll drive you. Oh, you can come in the bus with me. I'll take you back to school. Drop you at school. So he did that. He took her into school. It turned out, you know, there were a few tears. She learned a life lesson. Luckily, nothing happened. And she learned that, you know, you get off the bus, you cross the road, you find it, the next bus stop. You know, keep walking, you find a bus stop, and you go back the other way. And, she's since then, she's just thrived on public transport, and being very independent.
Yeah, it's a little bit different these days. Hopefully you could get more of a flexible working arrangement if you're in that sort of job. But, yeah.
Oh, now it's it would be so much easier now. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. So fascinating that, you know, you did this so long ago and were successful and have had the girls. Is there anything that you think our listeners would be particularly interested in from your journey that we haven't covered?
I'm just trying to think. I know I'm probably really boring, actually. Yeah, I don't think that my life's that interesting.
I think boring is good. That's ultimately what we all want, isn't it? It's a nice, simple.
Probably. Life.
Children.
Yeah. Just that, you know, not all, I don't want to go into detail, but, you know, I've had a lot of issues with my younger child. So I've had one child that's I've had no issues with, who's been really well behaved and high achiever, you know, kind of athlete type child. And my other child, has fallen off the rails a bit. So life doesn't always go as you plan, I guess. And it can be really hard.
But ultimately worth it.
It's ultimately worth it. And, you know, I wouldn't undo anything, despite some of the difficulties I'm having with my children now. No, I wouldn't change it. The only thing I'd do differently is, get a don't or no. I think that's probably the thing,
I guess some of the legislative changes, which meant that you can't actually get anonymous donors now, they all have to be willing to be contacted when their child turns 18, is a very positive move. And
it is a positive move. I think it's really great. And I would recommend to everybody, just tell your kids, don't make it into anything. Don't make it a thing. Just be factual and talk about it like it's normal. You know, don't, you know, if you make a thing, if you're secret, if you're, you know, you teach them to be secretive and feel shame. So I think you just need to be out and loud and proud and, you know, and pass that confidence on through to them as well.
Really great advice. So thank you so much, Catherine, for sharing your story. I know people are going to really enjoy listening to what their future could be like. So thank you for sharing.
Yeah, no worries. My pleasure.
I'm Alicia, and this is the No Need for Prince Charming podcast, bringing you stories of Australian solo mums who created their own happy ending. If you like what you heard, please follow or subscribe to make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, and leave a like, a review, or share with your friends to help others find it easier. Bye for now.